From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack.
Fiddling with the controls unsuccessfully, as always. Whew, what a week. What a week it has been, Megan Mack.
It has.
It has been a week. Let me just kind of start by saying, you're going to hear a lot about the elections this week. This has been one of those weeks where we wanted to be an open forum for people to talk about the election. And we are doing our darndest, I think, to make sure that we leave space for all sides on this. You're going to hear next week especially different angles, different people from different sort of parts of our community, some very happy about the election results, some very much not so. But I don't think, Meg, we've tried to go into this other than just trying to be real with people, right?
That's true. And I think it's important for people who are listening to feel free to reach out to us. If you think there's an angle that we haven't covered, if you feel like your voice is not being heard, you can email the program. We've gotten a lot of suggestions from listeners for show ideas that we're thinking about for next week. So if you have ideas, our email address is connections@wxxi.org.
Yeah. And so next week, we're going to talk about how President-elect Trump's policies will affect our relationship with Russia, healthcare,
Abortion rights.
Abortion rights, yep. We're going to talk about white women who Trump won white women handily, and they feel, we've heard from them saying we're sort of underrepresented in this conversation. So we will bring all of that, but let's start this podcast with some of the raw emotion from the week. Trump's victory has left many members of underrepresented groups fearful about their future, and we invited some of them to share their concerns with us.
First, you'll hear from Michelle Daniels. She was a super volunteer with the Clinton campaign, and she's African-American and Latina. Then you'll hear from Iman Abed, a community activist who is Muslim-American. We talked to them about the bigotry they've experienced both during and after the election and their thoughts about moving forward.
Michelle, how are you feeling?
I'm upset that my candidate lost, but I'm feeling motivated and inspired. Throughout this experience, I met a lot of people and saw their passion, and I know that we are not going to stop now. We did not turn out the vote. However, we have started a movement all across the nation where we know what was at stake and what is at stake, and we're going to fight harder. We have witnessed bigotry head on. We have witnessed bullying head on. And I have had to fight to actually stop myself from, you know, having to say nasty things back, because when I was campaigning in Philadelphia just this Friday, my crime was just walking and knocking on doors for Hillary with a Hillary shirt on. And two white grown men approached me. One had his finger right in my face yelling. All I said to him was over and over, love Trump's hate. Thank you for being an active voter. And it got aggressive.
What did he say?
He just was, you know, saying as many nasty talking points that he could say about Hillary. And then another guy in a truck started yelling about how Hillary is killing people because she's throwing people off of roofs through Saudi Arabia. It was just incoherent. And I told him the same thing. Love Trump's hate. Thank you for being an active voter. And I parted with, God bless you, my brother. And he yelled out, you effing idiot. So this is what we're dealing with.
Iman, how are you feeling right now?
I'm a little disheartened, a little discouraged, and I think fearful. I think those three words probably kind of encompass how I'm feeling today. And I just don't have any other words to say for the lack of hope that I have for the next 4 years. Just this morning, I was very vocal throughout social media about the way I felt about the results, and two people had responded to me telling me to go back to my own country, two people who weren't even friends on Facebook with me. And I assumed, of course, it was based upon my name that they were making the assumption that I was somewhere from the Middle East. And it's quite funny, only in the regards that I'm from America. I'm a natural born citizen. You know, my father is a first generation American. My mother isn't from here. But for God's sake, what would you be saying to my mother now if she shows up in hijab in a conservative district? You know, an area that may have prominently showed up for Donald Trump. And I just don't know what to say. I mean, this is happening in the same community I was raised in.
We have to find a way, though, don't we? We've got to find
a
way to bridge this.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to sit here and try to polarize ourselves any more than we have these last 2 years. But I do want people to know that I am incredibly fearful of what's ahead. And I do ask that if you are fearful of Muslim Americans, that you come out and you try to speak to us. I know you just briefly mentioned that Donald Trump supporters are saying, well, you have to listen to us and you have to hear from us. Well, I'm asking that you come to our own community, listen to us too. Don't make those general assumptions of who it is that we are. And I don't know what the future looks like for refugees or other immigrants. I don't know what it looks like. And quite honestly, it's not very positive. It's not positive for the people who already have been here. It's not even possible to look at something positive in regards to someone who is a natural born citizen. I can't even believe that I'm sitting here contemplating how I should feel, and I should be fearful of my own safety. And I don't want to be angry anymore, but, you know, it's only been 12 hours since we've been able to see the poll results come in and whatnot. And in the heat of the moment, this is exactly how I feel.
The phone lines were lit up throughout both hours on Wednesday, but there was one call that brought our guests to tears. All of us, really. It was from a woman named Sue, who says she was a victim of sexual assault.
It is so hard for me to talk because I was abused sexually while I was growing up. And I can't understand how I am gonna respect this person who has become my president and who has admitted as a sexual predator on the video and laughing about me and talking about her daughter's breast and talking about dating her daughter. It's like too much for me to understand where we have come. That's all. I can't even talk. Sorry.
It's okay, Sue. I'm sorry. I don't have anything else to say other than I'm sorry. You've got tears in every eye in this studio, Sue. Listen to the voices of fear. We have to try to grapple with this. This is very, very much in front of us here. And I don't think we have had an election like this. So that's why we wanted to make sure these voices are heard. We're going to hear from others in our next hour. But I'm sorry, Sue. And there's nothing else to say there, Sue, other than we're going to try... We're going to hope in many ways that our next president, you know, is striking a different tone. I think it's possible. We have to hope it's possible, right? We must, in terms of the tone, treatment of women, et cetera. Let's frankly hope, Sue, that this is a great president. Let's hope that together.
On Tuesday, we talked to investigative journalist David K. Johnston, author of the book The Making of Donald Trump. We invited him to talk about the future of American journalism under the Trump administration.
Now, back during primary season, Trump advocated for looser libel laws, which could make it easier for politicians to sue journalists when they publish what Trump calls hit pieces. So we asked David K. Johnston if he thought Trump would unilaterally try to change libel law.
The First Amendment in this country, which protects lots of rights, not just the rights of the press, rights of speech, right of assembly, right to believe or not believe, and to practice your religion, was adopted at a time when the newspapers of the day routinely just made things up. We had party press, and presidents had things made up about them, senators, governors. And even though everyone knew that there were all sorts of just flat-out lies being printed, they felt freedom of speech and the press was more important than their personal attitudes. That's because they were mature, well-educated people. They weren't Donald Trump, who believes only in the glorification and the greatness of Donald Trump, and who's been very clear, if it's not favorable to me, if I don't like it. He called me in April at home and told me that he would sue me if I didn't write it the way he likes. I've been a reporter now this month for 50 years. From the Santa Cruz, California City Council to the White House, I've never had a politician come within a mile of a statement like that. Because Trump's not a politician. He's a con artist.
Okay, but David, are you now concerned with your book out there and him about to become president? Do you feel that you could be sued, that you could be targeted? And do you think he really will try to move forward and limit press coverage that's negative?
Donald Trump will now have the power and ability to make my life difficult. Because of this law that was passed during Obama's time, he could literally have federal agents sweep me out of my house and hold me without any opportunity to have a hearing before a judge. And he may. He may not. But I am going to do what it's my duty to do. You don't run away from your job. You know, if you're a police officer and there's a shootout, you don't go, oh, I might get killed. You go to where the action is. I've run into a burning building. I have taken on the governments of South Africa and Taiwan. I have taken on, as somebody wrote about me once, Johnston is a big game hunter who takes on the biggest and most powerful institutions and people in the world. And that's a reasonable description. So, no, I'm going to do what I need to do.
Up next, a look at a local issue. The city of Rochester has drafted a climate action plan for the city. The plan includes recommendations for energy use and supply, waste management, clean water, and land use, all with the goal of reducing Rochester's carbon footprint.
Public transit is an integral part of that document, but there's some disagreement among stakeholder groups about how far the plan should go. We invited representatives from several of the groups to the program. First up is Abby McHugh-Griffa. She's a member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, which would like to see the city take a tougher stance on improving public transit.
This is one area where we would like to see the plan strengthened. A lot about bikes and walking, making walking easier, but not as much as maybe we would like about actually improving the bus system and even thinking longer term, what would be some form of high volume transit. I'm going to throw the word light rail out there. I don't know if that would be the right one for our area. But in the longer term, what are we looking at as we need to be moving more people around and getting less cars involved?
Okay, so you want to see this section strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to buses, or I guess I should ask then, you're talking about sort of different menu options here, maybe light rail. You're not standing here pounding the table saying it must be XYZ.
No, not at all. But public transit that is something other than, you know, walking or biking. There's a lot about electric vehicle charging stations, which is wonderful, but not accessible to everyone. And still, in terms of your climate impact, taking the bus, taking the train, if the train were an option, would be even better. And reduce congestion around our city, too.
Ann Spaulding from the city of Rochester, is that something, are those ideas that Abby just talked about, are those viewed in City Hall as financially viable, possible menu items here for improving the climate action plan, or does that seem like it's too expensive?
It's a little hard for the city to answer that question since we don't run the bus system. So I think it'll be really important for us to work closely with them to coordinate and to make sure that they understand that, you know, what we're trying to do, that we want to increase public transportation in the city. We want to make it easier for people to get to where they need to go by taking the bus. And, you know, I think they've done a lot so far with the new the transit center.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's always room for improvement. So I think, you know, working with them closely on the implementation of the plan will go a long way.
Okay.
And also educating people. You know, a big part of this plan is letting people know what their options are, whether it's through public transportation or energy efficiency or renewable energy or buying a plug-in vehicle. Many people just don't know what their options are and what incentives are available. So I think that's probably the main thing that we can do is get the information out there to people so they can make these choices and reduce their carbon footprints.
Okay. I want Rachel Walsh from Greentopia, if you want to weigh in on any of the prongs we've been discussing, especially when it comes to transportation. You know, how do you view some of that?
This is not going to be a popular answer, but I think transportation is going to be very, very difficult in this city. When you're talking about a 15 to 20 minute commute, even from the outskirts of town, there really is very little personal incentive to get on a bus. And I say that as someone who lived in a bigger city, and the only reason I would ride the bus is because it was twice as fast. There just isn't really the traffic here to make it worth someone's while to take mass transit. So unless you really, really care about climate and you're willing to get on your bike in the middle of winter, I think it's an uphill battle culturally in this city because there just isn't. You can get anywhere in 20 minutes, which makes it a challenge. So for me personally, and what we're looking at in our eco district plan is that the best leverage point when really people's
the, you know, paths don't, they're working on when their cost to heat their house is so much in the winter. That's a great incentive because people are going to want to lower that cost. When there's other things that people are going to want to get on board with because it really affects them poignantly right now, I think transit's going to be a harder sell. I think it does have the potential to be really effective in the future, but in terms of what are we actually going to get the public behind right now, I'm not sure the answer is transportation.
Climate is also a top priority for the Finger Lakes, and the Finger Lakes Land Trust has a 10-year plan to protect and improve the region. Some of it is about protecting the lakes from toxic algae, but it's also about making smarter decisions on how to develop the region.
Andrew Zepp is the executive director of the Land Trust. He told us that there are too many Finger Lakes towns and villages marred by poorly thought-out gas stations, fast food, and commercial projects.
Pick your convenience store or your mini storage units, which seem to be proliferating in amazing amounts. You're sitting on a town board. You've had some modest amount of training, but in comes a lawyer and an engineer showing this blueprint and these schematics that you can kind of understand, and you have limitations typically on your technical knowledge. You might have not much staff support. And then you're also might be afraid of being sued as what are the limits to your authority? And we're not saying in that case you should or shouldn't have mini storage, but if you look at places like Vermont that have design standards and you'll find a more thoughtful approach of how to site these things. And what we're losing as a region is we're kind of junking up the edges of our beautiful villages where you can see this, where it's a charming village, but suddenly at the edge of town is a very generic large gas station and a, you know, a sprawling mini storage unit. And the question is not should we have those or not, but can't we do it in a way that's better, both in terms of the scenic qualities and character of the region, and in some cases, these are encroaching on the very streams that feed the lake. So that's a big issue region-wide.
Here's something to watch as well. They tell us that, well, they're a little concerned about how the Trump administration will view climate change. We know that Donald Trump does not believe climate change is real, which could threaten funding for projects like this one. That is something to watch going forward. And that's it for this edition of Weekend Connections. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio 89.5 FM.
And you can always find us on the WXXI mobile app.
Have a great weekend. I'm Evan. She's Megan. We'll talk with you Monday afternoon.